Welcome to the show. There is a criminal charge the federal government can bring against people who do not file income tax returns. It's called willful failure to file. Today, you're going to learn the shocking truth about a crucial element government prosecutors know about the criminal allegation that remains hidden from the defendant's attorney, and the jury throughout the trial. Do you think anyone should ever be convicted of a crime when crucial information in the possession of the government remains hidden from the defense and the jury? When you're done watching this presentation, you'll understand exactly how the federal government pulls its willful failure to file scam. We're about to have some fun.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. As you may know, income tax is my area of expertise. I am the author of Income Tax: Shattering the Myth, the best-selling book in America that reveals the truth of the income tax the government does not want you to know. The truth is that U.S. income tax laws do not impose the income tax on ordinary, hardworking Americans like you. There is a false societal narrative that it does, but in reality, it doesn't. You'll have a much better understanding of that by the end of this presentation. I practice what I teach. I haven't filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 32 years. The U.S. Treasury Department is well aware of who I am and has admitted it has copies of Income Tax Shattering the Myth. I make a good living. I don't file tax returns or pay income tax. So, why no willful failure to file charge against me in 32 years? The simple answer is the government cannot afford to have the evidence you'll find in Income Tax Shattering the Myth introduced into a courtroom. Ever. Because it would topple the government's income tax house of cards. As long as the government can keep the American people ignorant about the truth of the income tax, at which the government has been incredibly successful, the government's false income tax narrative, its disinformation, brings in trillions of dollars a year from the American people, to which the government is not entitled under law. In order for you to understand the scam the government is pulling in the willful failure to file cases, I need to give you some information that would allow you to see how the government plays the American people for fools. I'm going to begin by discussing Form W-9, and then I'll transition to Form 1099. At some point, you may think I'm getting lost in the weeds discussing those forms, but I promise you the discussion is essential for you to properly understand the willful failure to file scam. I promise I will bring the discussion of those forms back to the issue of willful failure to file, and you will be stunned. Before we jump in, I want to let you know I'm running a special on my website, drreality.news, drreality.news. Any order containing Income Tax Shattering the Myth gets free shipping by using the code TARIFFS. More on that later. For today's discussion on willful failure to file, I'm going to use the example of the IRS having received a bunch of forms 1099 for a business person. As an FYI, the same principles you're about to hear apply if the IRS receives W-2s. I'll explain that a bit later. In order to understand the document flow that can lead to a potential willful failure to file charge, we need to understand the true legal purpose of Form W-9 in law. The true legal purpose of Form W-9 is not remotely what the public thinks. We need to begin with the W-9 because, as you likely know, it is the act of providing a W-9 to a business that causes that business to issue a 1099 against you. I was a businessman in Southern California before I learned the truth of the income tax. I'm sure, like many of you, I just saw the W-9 as a routine formality in business without any legal implication. Had I stopped to think about it, I would have realized there had to be a legal implication, but I didn't stop to think about it. Back then, I perceived myself to be a taxpayer, and I was filing annual tax returns. In that context, why would I bother giving any thought to what a W-9 means in law? In 1993, I learned what the form W-9 is in law. and I have never signed another one. So, who is to sign a W-9? To answer that, let's begin with the W-9's instructions. On page 2 of the instructions, we find this. Use Form W-9 only if you are a U.S. person, including a resident alien, to provide your correct TIN. TIN means taxpayer identification number. In other words, the Form W-9 is to be used to furnish a requester with the taxpayer identification number of a U.S. person. W-9 has no other purpose. So then, what is a U.S. person? To keep it short, a U.S. person is a U.S. citizen, U.S. resident, or a domestic entity, such as a corporation or trust. You can verify that at 26 U.S.C. 7701A30, if inclined. We all know that virtually all business people provide a W-9 whenever one is requested. The business person never stops to consider the legal implications of signing a W-9. Also, as just mentioned, it can only be signed by a U.S. person. Yet, we have not answered the one really important question. What is the person who signs a W-9, under penalty of perjury, conveying to the requester and to the IRS when the person who received the W-9 then files a 1099 against the U.S. person who signed the W-9? You're about to find out. If we go a bit farther down on page 2, we find a block entitled, By Signing the Filled Out Form. That block has 5 items. The tell about the purpose of the W-9 is in sections 4 and 5, so pay careful attention to them. The items read, 1, certify that the TIN you are giving is correct. 2, certify that you are not subject to backup withholding. Or 3, claim exemption from backup withholding if you are a U.S. exempt payee. And certify to your non-foreign status for purposes of withholding under Chapters 3 and 4 of the Code, if applicable. And certify that FACTA codes entered on this form, if any, indicating that you are exempt from the FACTA reporting is correct. Okay, so in item number 4, the signer is certifying that he, she, it is not a foreign person. If the signer is not a foreign person, then he, she, it is a U.S. person, which, as you saw a moment ago, is the only person permitted to sign a W-9. In item 5, the signer is certifying that he, she, it is exempt from FACTA. FACTA is a federal tax law that requires foreign financial institutions to report certain information about some of their customers to the U.S. Treasury Department. The theme in both items 4 and 5 is that the signer is attesting he, she, it is not a foreign entity. However, in light of the way the American business community views the W-9, what's all this talk about being a foreigner versus being a U.S. person? You may have taken note that item 4 connects what one is swearing to on the W-9 to withholding under Chapters 3 and 4 of the Code. That might lead a thoughtful person to want to know what Chapters 3 and 4 address. Let's look. Chapter 3 is entitled Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens and Foreign Corporations. And Chapter 4 is entitled Taxes to Enforce Reporting on Certain Foreign Accounts. That seems odd because what does one American giving another American a Form W-9 in the course of ordinary domestic business have to do with withholding income tax from non-resident aliens and foreign corporations or enforcing reporting on foreign bank accounts? Yet, in item 4 of the certification, it says that the signer is qualified, quote, for the purpose of withholding under Chapters 3 and 4. Smell a rat yet? A quick note before I continue. If you enjoy this kind of knowledge that you'll never get from any source other than this channel, please take a moment to subscribe and hit the like button so the algorithms will show this content to more people. Also, for a limited time, you can get free shipping on any of my writings as long as Income Tax Shattering the Myths is included in your order. Simply use the code TARIFFS at checkout. I'll share that again later. What do tax regulations tell us a W-9 is in law? 26 CFR 1.1471-B148 states, the term withholding certificate means a Form W-8, Form W-9, or any other certificate, blah, blah, blah. So then, with the Secretary of the Treasury telling us a W-9 is a withholding certificate, what does the Secretary tell us is to be done with this W-9 withholding certificate? Treasury Decision 8881 is entitled Revisions to Regulations Relating to Withholding of Tax on Certain U.S. Source Income Paid to Foreign Persons and Revision of Information Reporting Regulations. I have read all 244 pages of Treasury Decision 8881 and can assure you it pertains exclusively to U.S. source income being paid to foreign persons. Beginning at the bottom of page 14, we see Section 7, entitled Withholding Certificates, and Subsection A, entitled Forms W-9. The opening sentence reads, Section 1.1441-1D contains rules for a payee to establish its status as a U.S. payee. Under paragraph D, a payee that provides a Form W-9 may be treated as a U.S. payee that is not subject to withholding under Section 1441. Let's take a moment to unpack that. First, why is a Form W-9 being discussed at all in a Treasury decision dealing exclusively with U.S. source income being paid to foreign persons? Second, the sentence uses U.S. payee rather than U.S. person. Why? Because U.S. person can be either a payor or a payee. Here, the Secretary is clarifying that the U.S. person in the sentence is a payee. Third, the Secretary says that a person who provides a W-9 is not subject to withholding under Section 1441. So, what is 1441? Remember a moment ago I showed you that Chapter 3 is entitled Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens and Foreign Corporations? The first subchapter in Chapter 3 is Subchapter A, and you can see here that 1441 is the first section and is entitled Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens. Let's quickly review where we're at. Form W-9 is a withholding certificate. Withholding certificates are provided to withholding agents. We'll get to withholding agents in a moment. Treasury Decision 8881, which deals exclusively with U.S. source income paid to foreign persons, states that a person who provides a W-9 is not subject to withholding under Section 1441. 1441 deals exclusively with collecting U.S. income tax from non-resident aliens. You may have noticed there is a repeated connection in the law between Form W-9 and the payment of U.S. source income to foreign persons. Because a Form W-9 is a withholding certificate, which is provided to a withholding agent, let's find out who is a withholding agent. The definition of withholding agent can be found at 26 U.S.C. 7701A16 and reads, the term withholding agent means any person required to deduct and withhold any tax under the provisions of Section 1441, 1442, 1443, or 1461. You've already seen that 1441 addresses withholding of U.S. income tax from non-resident aliens. 1442, 1443, and 1461 address the same topic. In other words, the singular characteristic that defines a withholding agent is withholding U.S. source income tax from U.S. source income of a foreign person. We can see that Form W-9, which is a withholding certificate, is provided to a withholding agent, and the withholding agent is the person who withholds U.S. income tax from U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. Because Treasury Decision 8881 pertains exclusively to U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person, you may wonder why it says a person who provides a W-9 is not subject to withholding under 1441. Allow me to explain. Payments of U.S. source income belonging to a non-resident alien or foreign corporation are made by a person referred to in law as a payor. What is the definition of payor? That appears in the regulations at 26 CFR 1.1441-1 C19 and reads, the term payor is defined in 31.3406A2 of this chapter and 1.6049-4A2 and generally includes a withholding agent. The important words there are that a payor generally includes a withholding agent. In law, generally means it is always true unless an exception appears in the law for a specific section, subsection, paragraph, or sentence. I've been reading income tax law for more than 3 decades, and I have never seen an exception. In other words, payor is synonymous with withholding agent. Although we've already covered the definition of withholding agent in the statutes, let's see what the definition is in the regulations. We find that at 26 CFR 1.1441-7A, and it reads, for purposes of Chapter 3 of the Internal Revenue Code and the regulations under such chapter, the term withholding agent means any person, U.S. or foreign, that has the control, receipt, custody, disposal, or payment of an item of income of a foreign person subject to withholding. Let's do another quick recap. W-9 is a withholding certificate. The W-9 is to be used only by a U.S. person. Withholding certificates are provided exclusively to withholding agents. A withholding agent is a person who has control of U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. Withholding agent is synonymous with payor. I know this is a lot coming at you fast, so perhaps until you have a chance to read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, the important aspect on which to focus right now is this. A U.S. person completes the W-9, gives it to a withholding agent, and the withholding agent is a person who has control of U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. So, I ask you, what does that have to do with domestic companies doing business together without a foreign person owning the income? Answer, not a damn thing. I hope it's clear to you at this point that a U.S. person signs a form W-9 for the purpose of giving it to a payor withholding agent who is making payment of U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. So then, what is the role of this U.S. person in that process? I'm glad you asked. Let me answer that by giving you an example of how it works. Let's say a wealthy Bolivian wants to invest in Apple. U.S. law requires him to go through a U.S. agent to do that. In this scenario, let's say the Bolivian gentleman has a lot of U.S. business interests, so he has a U.S. law firm looking after those interests. He sends several million dollars to the law firm with instructions to buy Apple stock. The law firm forwards that money to the brokerage house it uses for such matters. The Apple shares are purchased in the name of the law firm. Over time, the shares appreciate, and the Bolivian decides to take his profits. He tells the law firm to sell his Apple shares, send him the profit, and reinvest the original capital in shares of Nike. In this scenario, Apple, the brokerage firm, and the law firm are all U.S. persons involved in the flow of U.S. income to its foreign owner. More to the point, Apple, the brokerage firm, and the law firm are all withholding agents because tax law states that every U.S. person in the pipeline of U.S. source income moving to its foreign owner is a withholding agent without regard to which U.S. person ends up actually conducting the withholding. In this scenario, the brokerage house gives Apple a W-9, which causes Apple to issue a 1099 in the name of the brokerage house, thus allowing the IRS to track the U.S. source income from its origin point, Apple, to the second U.S. person in the pipeline, the brokerage house. Then the law firm provides the brokerage house with a W-9, which causes the brokerage house to issue a 1099 in the name of the law firm, thus allowing the IRS to track the U.S. source income from the second U.S. person in the pipeline to the third U.S. person in the pipeline, which is the law firm. The law firm withholds the U.S. income tax and sends the balance to its Bolivian client. By withholding the tax, the law firm becomes liable to the United States government to pay the U.S. income tax imposed on the Bolivian's U.S. income. Strictly for illustrative purposes, let's switch it up and say Apple did the withholding at the source. In that case, Apple becomes liable to pay the tax to the government, and Apple would not request a W-9 from the next U.S. person in the pipeline because there's no longer any need to track the income. Withholding of U.S. income tax has already been done. In summary, W-9s and 1099s are nothing more than a means of providing documents to the IRS that allow it to track U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person from its U.S. point of origin to whichever U.S. person ends up doing the withholding. As I mentioned at the outset, providing a W-9 to a requester compels that company to file a Form 1099. In other words, Forms W-9 and 1099 are legally linked. One precipitates the other. Another way to say it is this: Form 1099 communicates to the IRS that to which the U.S. person swore on the W-9. With that understood, here's a question for you. Because the W-9 is used exclusively by a U.S. person to attest, under penalty of perjury, that he, she, it is involved in the flow, the pipeline, of U.S. source income from its origin point to its foreign owner, and the W-9 then compels the production of a 1099, what do you think the 1099 conveys to the IRS? If you're thinking a 1099 tells the IRS that you're a U.S. person who received U.S. source income as it moved from its origin point to its foreign owner, you hit the nail on the head. As a side note, the last time I counted, there were 17 variations of Form 1099. To distinguish one 1099 from another, the Treasury Department puts letters after the form number. Examples are 1099A, 1099NEC, and 1099G. All variations have the same meaning. The person whose name appears on the 1099 has received U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. Let me return to the statement I just made that a W-9 is exclusively to declare oneself a U.S. person who received U.S. source income as it moved from its origin point to its foreign owner. I've been reading income tax law for 32 years, and nowhere does the Secretary of the Treasury indicate a W-9 is to be used for any purpose other than a U.S. person receiving U.S. source income as it moves from its origin point to its foreign owner. How could it be anything else when it's a withholding certificate? And withholding certificates are only to be given to withholding agents. With that knowledge under your belt, let's get to the main point of this presentation, which is how what you just learned plays into a willful failure to file charge. In the 32 years I've been in this space, no defendant in a willful failure to file case has ever known what we've discussed today. And that ignorance also extends to their attorneys. At trial, the government introduces the 1099s it possesses for the years concerning which the defendant has been charged. The prosecutor knows what those 1099s mean, but the defendant and his counsel do not. The defendant believes he is being prosecuted for not paying the tax on his personal earnings, and in his mind, the 1099s are merely evidence of that. The defendant may be in court because he has a sincere and well-founded belief that the federal government has no constitutional authority to impose the income tax on his personal earnings. And he's right about that. The Supreme Court just confirmed that in 2024 in the Moore decision. I'll put the link to that video down in the notes. A defendant's pretrial arguments of law concerning the federal government's lack of constitutional authority to tax his personal earnings will be dismissed outright by the court. Trial watchers will then claim that proves the court is corrupt. In reality, the court will dismiss that argument because the prosecutor and the judge know what the defendant and his attorney do not, which is that the defendant is not being prosecuted for failing to file a return for his personal earnings, but rather for failure to pay the income tax he was legally required to withhold from a foreign person. Phrased simplistically, the government is prosecuting him for apples and the defendant wrongly thinks the case is about oranges. Keep in mind that the 1099s entered into evidence by the prosecution constitute presumptive evidence based on the defendant's sworn statement on the W-9s that he received U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. And the defense never disputes that. Even though the defendant has no idea about the legal implications of 1099s and obviously did not receive U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person, let's pretend for a moment that he did receive U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person and see what that would look like. In that scenario, the defendant would have four choices. First, withhold the tax and pay it over to the government. Had that happened, there wouldn't be a trial. Second, withhold the tax and not pay it over to the government, which could lead to a willful failure to file charge if the act was done willfully. Third is not to have withheld at all, which would make the defendant liable for the tax because every U.S. person who touches U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person is considered a withholding agent. Accordingly, not withholding makes a withholding agent liable for the amount of tax that was supposed to be withheld but wasn't. And lastly, the defendant could have pushed the foreign person's U.S. source income down the pipeline to the next U.S. person. In that case, the defendant would have filed a 1099 showing he pushed the money down the pipeline and identifying the U.S. person who received it. But back to what happens in a willful failure to file case. There is no way for the defendant to put on an effective defense because neither he nor his attorney understand the true nature of the allegation against him. Anything and everything the defense puts forth will be off point from the true nature of the allegation and therefore worthless. Is it any wonder the government enjoys a 90% conviction rate in criminal tax cases? It's not that the government is that good, it's that the public and criminal tax defense attorneys are thoroughly ignorant of the true nature of the allegation. I should point out that felonies such as tax evasion rely on the same underlying ignorance because if the potential defendant isn't a foreign person with U.S. source income or a U.S. person withholding agent, the income tax has nothing to do with him. That said, keep in mind that probably 99.9% of criminal tax defendants believe they do owe the tax, as do their attorneys. As a side note, despite the narrative that cases in the federal system are assigned to judges based on a random assignment, there are plenty of obvious exceptions. As an example, anyone who has paid attention to criminal tax cases over the years sees the same judges' names time and again. Why is that? It's because relatively few judges know the truth we've been discussing today. So chief judges make sure criminal tax cases are assigned to the judges who know how the scam works. Some of you are probably thinking this kind of prosecution has to be unconstitutional. It's not. The reason it's not is that while the prosecution is required to disclose all evidence to the defense that the government intends to introduce at trial, the prosecutor is not required to teach tax law to the defense attorney. Because the defense attorney has no clue how tax law operates and thinks everyone owes income tax, the defense blunders into court without a realistic chance of winning. I bet quite a few of you are wondering how to avoid getting yourself into a mess like this. The good news is, it's super easy. A criminal tax case is filed only after the presumptive taxpayer has exhausted his due process rights. Using one's right of due process to put the facts and the law into the administrative record is the key. That's because the government does not pursue anyone for income tax, let alone take them to trial, who correctly puts the accurate facts and law into the administrative record. And to be clear, it's not that IRS employees or government employee or government attorneys are wonderfully moral people who want to do the right thing. It's that they cannot afford to have the income tax house of cards collapsed by someone who knows what the law really says, bringing the truth into a courtroom. Let me tell you a quick story about Wesley Snipes. Shortly after the government filed willful failure to file charges against him, his people reached out to me and asked if I would join his defense team. I was thrilled. I relished the opportunity to sit across the table from a federal prosecutor and discuss the pretrial arguments of law Snipes would be making to the court and what cross-examination of their criminal investigators would look like, which would essentially cover the points we've discussed today. What I wanted to do was to put the prosecutors in the position that they had to file a motion to dismiss the charges against Snipes because they could not afford to have the evidence we would submit at trial reported by every news outlet in America and lose the case. My only requirement to join Snipes' defense team was that Snipes drop the errant 861 position on which he had relied for not filing and rely on the law correctly. Rely on the law as you've seen it today. Unfortunately, I was told that 861 was the hill Snipes was prepared to die on. We know how that turned out. At the beginning, I asked you why, after not filing a tax return or paying income tax in 32 years, I have not been charged with willful failure to file. Now you know. Let me sum it up for you in two sentences. Are you ready? The government only prosecutes people who believe they owe the tax or are relying on some cockamamie argument to support not filing. The government never prosecutes anyone who knows what the law really says. Let's quickly touch on how this works if forms W-2 have been filed rather than 1099s. I'm not going to dig into this as I did the W-9 and 1099 issue because you can read all about the W-4s and W-2s and income tax shattering the myths. For today, I'll simply say what a form W-2, which is predicated on the payor having a valid W-4, signifies to the IRS that the person whose name appears on the W-2 is a non-resident alien who received U.S. source income in the form of wages. Let me simplify that for you with the following two sentences. Form 1099 reflects U.S. source income paid to a U.S. person acting as the domestic agent of the income's foreign owner. Form W-2 reflects U.S. source income paid directly to a non-resident alien in the form of wages. Knowing what you know after this presentation kind of makes you wonder why Americans sign hundreds of millions of W-9s every year. Now let's talk about how you can get 100% dialed in on all of this. Anyone who wants to know what income tax law really says should read Income Tax Shattering the Myths. Readers have often called it the Bible concerning the truth of the income tax. If you order it right now, I'll pay the shipping. In fact, right now, I'm offering free shipping on any order from my drreality.news site if the order contains a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths. I'm going to suggest you purchase the 4-pack containing Income Tax Shattering the Myths, the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, the Business Handbook for Form W-9, 1099 in U.S. Person, which you just heard about, and Body Science. The first reason to get the 4-pack is that the price is already deeply discounted from purchasing the 4 items individually. The second reason is that in addition to it being deeply discounted, you get free shipping by using the code TARIFFS. Here's a quick overview of each item in the 4-pack. Income Tax Shattering the Myths. You already know what that's going to give you. Mountains of incontrovertible proof that the income tax has never been imposed on ordinary hardworking Americans like you. The Business Guide to Payroll Withholding is a 13-page item intended to help workers convey the truth we've been discussing today to the company for which they work in order to ask them to follow the law and stop withholding. Not everyone is articulate or can recall legal citations on the spur of the moment, so I wrote the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding to help with that. It's also a great primer if you just want to wake somebody up to the truth of the income tax. The Business Handbook for Form W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person is also 13 pages and is intended to help self-employed people communicate to those with whom they do business why they are not required to furnish a Form W-9, which you know now, and why the person or entity paying them is not legally required. In fact, is not legally permitted to file a Form 1099. The handbook is also a great primer if you want to wake somebody up about the truth of the income tax. Body Science is my groundbreaking work on human physiology that is the key to what so many people say they want, which is to turn around the health of the American people. Sadly, the vast majority of Americans prefer to get their views on nutritional physiology from a corrupt media rather than a physiologist who tears down the false establishment health narratives and gives you the science of getting and staying healthy, presented in a way everyone can understand. If you're sincere about getting and staying healthy, and you want that for the people you care about, you need to read Body Science. I practice what I preach. I adhere to everything you'll discover in Body Science at 65. I'm as healthy as I was at 25. I'm in perfect health. No chronic diseases, no big pharma products, and I haven't been sick a day in years. During the COVID event, I never wore a mask, never social distanced, shook hands with people, hugged my friends, lived life as I always had, and never got COVID. That's how your immune system will function if you follow what you learn in Body Science. So go to drreality.news and pick up Income Tax Shattering the Myths or the 4-pack. Remember to use the coupon code TARIFFS to get free shipping on any order containing Income Tax Shattering the Myths. Also, purchasing any of my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. If you found today's content intriguing and compelling, please spread the word by sharing this video far and wide. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. I hope you consider it time well spent.